We're in a culture that has more train wrecks on marriages than you can shake a stick at. I mean, it's just we keep failing at marriages in our culture. And yet, all those failures only reflect a brokenness of a way of doing marriage. The reality is that there's a truth and there's a dream that you can hang on to, and you don't have to get cynical. You can hang on to that dream, but you can't get to that dream by doing things the way the world does them. There's a way to get to that dream that's different. We're in a series entitled Lord of the Rings, Experiencing God's Best in Your Family. We're basing this series out of some key principles in the Song of Solomon. And so glad that you are here. We began last week and started in this concept talking about marriages and some wholeness issues. We'll kind of pick it up today. I want to tell you that next Sunday, we will go a little further in the Song of Solomon. Next Sunday is our PG service. It won't be rated R. My name is Randy, and I embarrass way too easy for us to go R, I assure you. It will be someone on staff besides me if it's R. But because it's a PG service next week, we're going to talk about human sexuality, not just within marriage, but within the framework of God made you to be female or made you to be male. And that does mean certain stuff you have to process and understand, and if you don't, man, your own sexuality and your own life will hurt you, let alone in your marriage. And so we're going to talk about some of the sexual issues. And so again, I encourage you to take a great advantage of our youth department next week. In fact, I may even go with the kids. But anyhow, that will be here. The following week, we will do some things on parenting and family dynamics within the family. And then the last one in this little series is one that I know is just, it's painful, but we need to talk about it. The last in the series is entitled Living a Plan B Life When You Had Plan A Dreams. Due to choices other people make, some of you are saying, wow, Randy, I wanted that dream, but other people made choices that stole my dream. How would we do with that? What do you do with that? Others of you would say, wow, I wanted a plan A life. I'm confident, but I'm the one who tore up my world, and I would do anything to go back and change what I did, but I can't go back. And so we're going to pick that up. This morning, I want to start with a absolutely key concept. It's the same one we were on last week, from Song of Solomon, chapter 2, verse 7. It has the idea, as it goes up on the screen here, it has the idea of what is said, young women of Jerusalem, I charge you with gazelles and the wild does of the field, do not stir up or awaken love until the appropriate time. That concept is really important. In fact, it's repeated three times in the Song of Solomon. Don't stir up love before its time. Why? What is that about? Well, the reality is that love is so significant, its impact is so powerful, that those that are competent and able to handle it, they will do great, good, and wonderful things for their children and their husband or their wife and their family. Those who are competent to handle it. But love is so incredibly powerful that if you are underdeveloped in your character or in your concepts, you'll do great damage under the guise of loving somebody. Never give a four-year-old boy a bat in a living room, okay? I mean, you understand. Never give a four-year-old boy a bat inside the living room. And never let somebody begin to step into a family situation, certainly in a leadership role as a husband or a wife, that you don't understand the damage that comes from an underdeveloped character or underdeveloped concepts. Many years ago, Scott Cresson gave this to me. It has meant a lot. Scott is a friend of mine here and lives here in the area. It's an article by Russell Dix. I've used it a few times, but I think it kind of snapshot of our culture. This is about a wedding that never actually took place, but I've been at that wedding and so have you. Assuming that this feeling of love is irresistible, like a flood, many couples invariably find themselves standing before a minister to be married. The minister, do you take this woman with all of her immaturity, self-centeredness, nagging, tears, and tension to be your wife forever? The dumb ox, temporarily hypnotized by the prospect of being able to sleep with her every single night, mumbles, I do. Then the preacher asks the starry-eyed bride, Do you take this man with all of his lust and moods and indifference and immaturity and lack of discipline, do you take him to be your husband forever? She thinks that forever means all of next week because she's never experienced even 1 month of tediousness or responsibility or denial of her own wishes. So she chirps, "I do," in the thought that she has now become a woman. Then the patient minister parrots, "By the authority committed to me as a minister of Christ, I pronounce you man and wife." And as he does, he prays a silent prayer for forgiveness, for he knows he lies. They are not now husband and wife, and he knows that few of them ever will be. They're now legally permitted to breed, fuss, bully, spend each other's money, and be held responsible for each other's bills. It's now legal for them to destroy each other, so long as they don't do it with a gun or a club. And as that minister goes home, he wonders, isn't there a more honest way to earn a living? I have been that minister. And I have been that minister at that wedding. I can tell you I came to a place many years ago where I said, not again. Not again. I decided a long time ago that I owed an explanation to a 5-year-old girl who probably isn't even born yet. A little girl who one day that I would face and would grow up in a home where there's a set of parents either underdeveloped by character or underdeveloped by concepts, and I owe that little girl an explanation why I was an accomplice to put her in a situation that would tear her heart out. And I have people ticked at me all over this community and all over this neighborhood because in the 27, 28 years I've been here, there are a lot of weddings. I've said, no, you matter, and you're an incredibly important person, but no, I'm not doing your wedding. Because that 5-year-old girl, when she comes, I want to be able to look at with a conscience and say, hey, sweetheart, for at least the small role I could play, I wanted you to be in as safe a home for love as possible. Love. That's where we have to spend our time today. It's an incredibly big subject. I'm going to do this as fast as I can. Much of this material comes from a DVD set that I have. It's about 6 hours of stuff. I try not to duplicate that very much in the public speaking here, but this morning, for the sake of covering as much as we need to, I need to do it. And so if you go, this doesn't make sense, it is in a DVD set series entitled A Lifetime Love that our bookstore has. But let's kind of get to it. When people fall in love in this culture, we don't know what that means. That's a soupy nonsense word. I mean, love is a sappy word that has no framework of reference. And so what you have to do is you have to kind of work through lots of marriages and lots of relationships before you realize, wait a second, there is something. There's a structure underneath people don't recognize. When people say they love someone in this culture, speaking of marriage, they mean one of three things. Either you have a comprehension of a concept that is this one, or you have a concept and what you believe about why you love is this one, or you have a concept down here that is this one. You see, the little boy who sort of grows up and he has sat in this chair and he falls in love with the girl who's in that chair, why did he fall in love with her? He knows 17 jillion girls. Why did he choose that girl to love? Why did his heart get attached? What caused the boy in this chair to go to that girl? The answer will depend upon which of these three things he believes at his core inner being. He didn't even know he believes these things. He didn't even know he believes them. But the three are these. We give our love in this culture for the first one because we believe that if someone would meet our needs, if someone can fill the hole in our chest, then we can't help but love them back. It's just an automatic response. The same way gravity works. I drop something, it hits the ground. You don't have to work hard for gravity. You just do it and it drops. The same way they basically believe that if someone could meet my needs, I couldn't help but just respond in love. And so what you have is an individual who believes that the reason that they love that girl or that boy is because they were the right person to come in my life and meet my needs. Love is generated by something. I'm holding up a AA battery. That is the equivalent of this concept. It basically has to do with the idea that if I wake up and I don't feel as in love with Julie this week or this month, I'm trying to figure out where Julie has backed off and let down. Why in my world am I still struggling? Because she's left me hanging and she's backed off. And Julie, you need to straighten up, sweetheart. Because my being in love with you comes as a result of if you'll meet my needs. It's the cheap high school romance. It's the little girl that has a hole in her chest, and she walks all the halls here, and everybody else is airbrushed and pretty, but she doesn't see herself. Everybody else has a place in life they belong, but she doesn't have a place, but she would be happy if the right guy loves her. And so a guy comes in her world, and he loves her. He really does, from the same perspective, probably, but he gives her great affection, and she falls in love with him. How long does a AA battery last? The answer is you change these things about like you use floss on your teeth. You see, the trouble is, if this is what generates love, what do you do when you wake up in the morning and you still have the hole in your chest? You've been married for 1 to 3 years. What do you do when you wake up and you go, I don't feel as in love? The answer is they must not be loving me well enough. And you do one of two things. You either attack and try to make them love you better, or you step back and get your feelings hurt and you start shutting down and you go, wow, I'm withdrawing, but they're not even catching on. And this one just falls apart. The second one is very similar. It sounds better. The second system is basically the equivalent of a 9-volt battery. Can I tell you, these work better. But I replaced these things again like they were popcorn. It cannot generate love. What generates love? The second one basically believes that someone, because of their personality and because of their character, just because who they are, I'm just attracted to that, and I like somebody because the chemistry is right. Basically, it has to do with you're the kind of person that I really, really enjoy. And so, to use a silly illustration, I might have a box of the kind of person that I would like to give my love to, and I dated this girl, and it was a no, and dated this girl, and it was a no, and dated this girl, and it was a no, and by the way, that's kind of reversed. Oftentimes, I was, that, we won't go there, but anyhow, so you're holding up, and you come to the one, you go, wow, there's something. You walked in the room, a chemistry happened, you have the kind of laugh, you kind of have the kind of humor, you have the kind of work ethic, you have the kind of, wow, it's just right. It just, poof, you put the right two things together and sparks and smokes and, you know, I mean, you're great. You know, I like this. And we're compatible. And so we love. I'm not opposed to the dating with a box. In fact, I will tell you this, if you don't have a box about what you're looking for when you date, you'll date some really weird characters. I'm telling you that right now. You need a box, okay? That's true. But here's the problem. The problem is, when my wife married me, she didn't marry a rock. You take a rock and you look at it this year, next year, next year, next year, it's the same thing. It's always a rock. It's always the same rock. Trouble is, my wife married somebody who's in constant transition. And I married somebody who's in constant transition. So when, in fact, what happens is when my wife would say, Randy, I love you and you fit the box that I'm really looking for, here's the problem. Give me about 5 to 8 years, I'm not the same guy she fell in love with. In about 5 to 8 years, things begin to change. You've heard me say this before in a public way. When I was in college, I was happy-go-lucky. The yearbooks will always say about Randy, happy-go-lucky, all those kinds of things. I was pretty exuberant. I was pretty social. My wife thought she was marrying a more active, socially individual. Right now, I'm 55 years old. I'm a brown paper sack. I mean, I know what I am. I like who I am, but I am far more quiet. I am far more content. I am far less social. My wife could scream foul. Wait a second. I married a guy who was this box, but I got a guy who's this box. This isn't right. And we could spend a long time on this one and probably need to. But do you want to know why couples who used to love each other drift apart? We just slowly drift. You end up dancing with a stranger. Dancing in the dark with a stranger. You sleep in the same bed, you eat at the same table, but you have less and less in common. he gets more involved with his work and his hobbies, and she gets more involved with the kids. And we slowly, slowly, slowly just go different directions. 30 to 35% of all American marriages are this first one over here. I'll love you if you meet my needs, but nobody can meet your needs well enough. Nobody. Nobody can. This one is about 50 to 55% of all American marriages. You're talking 80 to 90% of all American marriages are these two. You want to know what they have in common? The answer is they're both selfish. They are generation. They're generated. Love is generated. This is a key concept. Love is generated. It comes as a product of if you're what I like and if you meet my needs. And as long as that generator's running, love keeps happening. But I don't know any marriages that ever works for. You got to do one of two things. You either have to give up on the marriage or you have to change to something else. You better change to a different concept. And so we come to the third one. This is the one that everybody wants. This is the one why Song of Solomon would say, don't awaken love before it's time. Don't you dare walk into marriage. Don't you dare walk into family with underdeveloped concepts or underdeveloped character. What's the third one? Well, if the one's a AA battery, if this is a 9-volt battery, I realize it's a bit of a cheesy illustration, but you recognize what this is. It's a solar panel. A solar panel has this unique, wonderful ability to recharge and regenerate. It used power yesterday, it used power all night, but today it regenerates and it regenerates and it regenerates. Julie and I have been married for 33 years. If she does not, I can tell you this honestly, as suave and debonair as I am, if she does not have a love that regenerates itself every morning and every day, my wife could not love me as she does. She's got to have something, and I don't, again, mean to take this illustration too far, but if she doesn't have something that turns toward the sun every day and gets some regeneration, she's going to struggle on her ability to love me. What is this system? This third system is a disconnect from what you expect. This one generates love if you meet my needs. This one generates love as long as you're what I like. This one generates love because treating you with love is my act of worship to the King. It is the decision that is made that today I will treat Julie not if she meets my needs, not because she's what I like, but today I will treat her with genuine acts of love as my act of worship. Men may have brought sheep and doves and offerings of all kinds to the altar of God, but the altar of God I will come to is the altar of God that today, God, I come as a man who will see this woman is treated with love. And it's an act of war. It is a servanthood generated. Do you want to know what generates this one? The answer is servanthood to the living God in your family generates your love. Now, I have no doubt that somebody sitting here is going, Garris, this doesn't make any sense. I was sort of tracking with you down here. What causes me to love somebody? But you're telling me that servanthood and an act of worship will come. That sounds to me like a stupid church answer that when I go to the parking lot has absolutely nothing to do with reality. I want to challenge you on that. You see, I want to start with this basic question of what causes you to love someone? What causes you to genuinely love? I have to borrow an illustration. I have two girls in the front row. Thank you for sitting here. Both girls, you are now in the middle of the sermon, whether you wanted to be or not. Thank you. You understand better why people sit way up there. But anyhow, if you girls, you don't have to say anything or do anything, you're safe, but I'm going to make up a silly story about you, okay? And I'm sorry about this. Please, I ask you forgiveness before we start, all right? What causes the human heart to love what it loves? Is it if I'm treated well enough, I'll love? Is it because in chemistry? The answer to that's no. I'm going to make both of these girls, I'm going to wave my magic wand, you're both sixth graders. Bang, you're back to sixth grade, okay? I come to both girls and I give them both gerbils. You get a gerbil and you get a gerbil. Neither girl wanted a gerbil. Who wants a little rodent around your house kind of thing, all right? But I give them both gerbils and I say to it, here's your instructions. I want you to feed it and I want you to water it and clean its cage and take it for a walk and all those sort of things. And so, okay, and so here's your instructions, all right? Neither girl had any affection or desire for a gerbil. But now I got to make this part up and my apologies already. You need to know that this girl is self-disciplined. You need to know that she has a sense of character in her life that even lets her do hard things. That this girl has a pace in her life that is healthy on many things. So while she doesn't care about the gerbil, every morning she feeds the gerbil and waters the gerbil and cleans its cage, you know, and takes it for the, you know, Sunday afternoon walk and all those sort of things. And she does that for the gerbil. Again, my apologies. You need to know that she's a slob, okay? I'm making this up, okay? I am making this. You need to know this girl doesn't really have a pace to her life. She kind of lives a little off her emotions. She doesn't really have that, a little bit more immature. She has a stupid gerbil every day she has to feed. She forgets to feed it on a regular basis. She forgets to water it on a regular basis. She cleans its cage sometimes. This girl just doesn't have a pace to her life to take very good care of that gerbil. In fact, I tell the same story on a regular basis. Every night she gets in trouble over that stupid gerbil. She's sitting at the kitchen table at night and her mom says, did you feed the gerbil today? And she says, no, Mom, I forgot to feed the gerbil. Mom says, I know you didn't feed the gerbil. In fact, I had to feed your gerbil again today. And Mom asks this great question. Do you know how many times that gerbil would have died if I hadn't fed it? The answer is once, Mom. It would have died once. But that's not a good time to bring that up. Really, I don't suggest that answer. Now, by some magic wave of the wand, both gerbils, 90 days into this deal, both gerbils die the same day. This girl is relieved. I mean, she feels guilty. Don't misunderstand me. She feels guilty and wondered whether she killed it or not. But I mean, she's so glad to have that gerbil gone. It has been a royal pain in the neck, okay? This girl made a funny little note in a sixth grade girl's diary. This girl wrote in her diary, it's funny, but I cried for a gerbil today. The two girls get together and she says, you cried for that gerbil? Yeah, I kind of like the thing. Well, you must have had a more cuddly gerbil than I had because mine wasn't very cuddly or very adorable or very this or very that. You and I both know the truth, don't you? I mean, you know where I'm going with this. Jesus gives an incredible principle that you have to wrap your hands around. It's how God wired us. Whether you're a Christian or not, this truth is there. God hardwired. Where your investment is, there will your heart be. And where your investment is not, your heart will not be. It's that simple. The reason my wife has loved me for 33 years is not because I'm good enough to hold her love, attract her love, or be interesting or funny or any of those things. After 33 years, she knows almost everything I'm going to say, do, or fumble. But she loves me dearly because it has been generated out of servanthood and investment. And where your investment is, your heart will be. Why do mamas love their babies? You say, well, mamas always love their babies. No, they don't. No, they don't. We have horror stories all over the place. But do you want to know why the normal mama loves her baby? She carried hopes and dreams, and she invested in this baby mentally long before this baby was ever conceived. She throws up every 20 minutes for 3 months for this baby that's not even born yet. She carries this baby 9 months. She goes to every garage sale in the four-state area and buys dealy daubers to hang in a nursery. She goes through every embarrassing examination you can imagine. She spends bukus of money. She goes through 23 hours of hard labor. She brings home this little thing that looks more like a... Well, that's not a handsome child. I'm just telling you that right now. I mean, everybody's kind enough to say so, but people walk and say, well, that is a baby. Yeah, that's certainly a baby. She takes this baby home. This baby, she walks a million miles with a colicky baby at night. She calls her mom crying. I can't get my baby to stop crying. And she cries with her mama about how you take care of babies. She changes diapers. And she loves this baby. You tell me one thing this baby's done for her. That baby hadn't turned one tap to help anything. Poops and spits up. Sometimes at the same time. You see, that child doesn't have to do anything to be loved. A child's just made in the image of God. That's all it is. And a mama loves her baby because where your investment is, that's where your heart will be. So what's that got to do with marriage? The reality is that every one of us who are in a marriage that has worth and value is the reality that we live with very flawed people. That is the nature of life. But when is my act of worship? I decide today, Lord, the way I will serve you is I will be a servant to my wife. And my act of servant to you is I will take good care of her physically and emotionally. God nudges the angels with his elbow and says, watch this. His heart will be deeply in love with his wife. Don't you misunderstand that servanthood is some kind of doormat. Don't you dare think servanthood is some kind of doormat. Servanthood is noble and courageous. It's a kind of love that really looks after somebody in the right kinds of ways. I can tell you on many occasions, my wife has through the years, rightfully so, my wife has sat down and said to me, Randy, I love you too much to not say this to you. Randy, do you know the damage you do when you do that? My wife through the years has said to me, Randy, you're too good a man to act that way. Julie has not been the doormat that loved me. She has been a partner with the living God, and she has lived with patience and quietness, and she's also lived with the courage and dignity of confrontation. That's how you love people. Those of you that really love your kids, you love them enough to discipline in some gentle and firm ways, both together. Gentleness and firmness. You don't hurt your kid when you're doing those things. When gentleness and firmness go together, you're loving your child. Marriage is the same way. I'm not asking for Christian doormats, the man to get run over by his wife over and over again. No, love your wife enough to say, sweetheart, you're not right. And an approach you're taking, and it's hurting me and the kids, it's hurting you. We need wives who understand that too. And the end result is you end up married to somebody who's looking after you. Not perfectly, but they're looking after you as an act of worship, and their heart follows. I was in Cincinnati Airport this week coming back. Ben Hedger here in the congregation. I think I saw Ben over here a little while ago. Ben and I were on the same flight. We bumped into each other at the airport. I told Ben what I was going to preach. I asked him, I said, Ben, I'm in my 50s. You're not in your 50s. What's the main problem with most marriages? And Ben didn't hesitate at all. He said, among the world I live in and the age group and the people, he said, it's just selfishness. Just selfishness. It's people who don't want to really love, so they attack out of selfishness. It's people who don't really want to love, so they get passive and step back. Whatever you do to the other person, it will be damaging. You're doing more damage to your own heart because your own heart grows colder and more apathetic. I want to remind you that this concept is really essential. Do not awaken love to understand this concept. Proverbs chapter 24, verse 3 has just the very simple truth. In Proverbs 24, he says, by wisdom a house is built, and through understanding it's established. But it's not just a concept. You have to have the character to do it. It requires wholeness. You realize, don't you, that sin destroys who we really are? You realize, don't you, that all sin in my life destroyed what I was always meant to be, and it's in my restoration with the Creator and my Redeemer that Randy finally shows back up as he should have been. You can't be a servant until some wholeness comes and you start being restored internally from what sin has destroyed. You can't take broken and splintered boards and build fine furniture. You can't take a childish heart and exhibit servanthood and courage. You can't take pouty emotions and demonstrate unwavering devotion. In Proverbs chapter 24, verse 10, there's a concept that just is really important. In Proverbs 20:10, if you fail in time of trouble, how small is your strength? What's that mean? What that means is loving is hard, and we're required to love in times of hard things, and you have to have enough character and wholeness to do it. Life is going to come and slap the family around left and right. Do you have enough wholeness to live this out? Just as I start to wrap up here, let me say, it's not only this wholeness required to give love, it's required to even receive love. Do you want to know why Judas couldn't feel really loved by Christ and would betray him? It's because Christ didn't love well enough. No. It's because if you don't have wholeness, even if somebody tries to love you well, you can't even receive it well. Those two things should drive every man and woman here to say, God, would you restore what sin has destroyed? Would you make me whole? And that's a journey you get to take. You probably went out of here before the evening service. Let me brush across some stuff fast. I could speak to those of you that are married and say, this is what you need to become. I could speak to those of you that are single and say, this is what you need to look for. For brevity, I'm going to speak to the singles. If you're single and you want to know, was somebody whole? How do I know? Put them to the hearing test. There are four tests. Number one, put them to the hearing test. What are you hearing from wise and godly people about them? What are you hearing from wise and godly people about them? If you know people that are wise and godly that intersect with their life, you need to know what those people think. If you say, well, they're in a circumstance in life and where they are, I don't know that there's even really any wise and godly people in their life that I could even get that answer from. Run for the hills. Run for your life. Everybody who has wholeness will be in association with others who are godly and whole and wise. Put them through the hearing test. What are you hearing? Number two, look at the reflex test. The reflex test. Everybody reacts to people. Everybody reacts to people. Your fiance, the boyfriend or girlfriend, the person you have some interest, how do they react to people? Julie's sitting here, and I know I have to speak personally about my own life and marriage, but Julie had incredible abilities and talents, but can I tell you the day that I decided, and I don't know if it was a Tuesday or a Thursday, but the day I decided that was the woman that I wanted to have in my life the rest of my life, was she was a college girl, and I watched how she treated people who were a bit left-footed, and she was tender and patient, and she invested in, and she was looking after people that don't have the greatest social skills, who didn't have that much to bring or offer to the social circles, and Julie was comfortable inside the social circle. She was comfortable looking after people that would be hard to look after. And I can tell you that my decision was that she could live with a left-footed husband and do pretty well. You got to see how they react. Number three, the stress test. Put them through the stress test. Everybody has adversity. Everybody comes with hard things. You come with a father who's a difficult person to deal with, or a mother. You come with physical things. You come with, there's adversity of every kind, financial, whatever. What somebody is under stress is really important. And if your fiance explains away why he doesn't have any relationship at all and why he behaves like he does toward his father, because his father's, if he explains away why under stress he behaves as he does, you can know you have a foolish individual. Look at him under stress, and if you say, wow, I see a man of courage and a man of gentleness, and I see a man of patience. And no, he doesn't have the relationship with his father that I wished he had, but that's his father, not him. He's gentle and godly and patient, and he looks like Christ in that situation. Then you know you got a keeper. Look at him under the stress test, and we could go further with that. And then lastly, and I know this sounds a little forced, but so be it. You got to finish with the mineral test. Matthew chapter 7. You want to know who to share life with? It's pretty simple. At the end of the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says this in Matthew chapter 7. Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain came down and the streams rose and the wind blew and they beat against that house, but it did not fall because it had a foundation on the rock. Not so with the man who builds in the sand. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice like a foolish man who built his house in the sand. And the rains came down and the streams rose and the winds blew and they beat against that house and it fell with a great crash. Now you tell me, which house do you want to attach yourself to? And the question on this one is, do you have a husband or a wife who will stand on the rock? Oh, I understand you may get embarrassed right now where you're waiting for somebody because they're wrestling with the Lord, and your act of worship to a non-Christian spouse is still to love them in servanthood. And we'll talk about that later, even in the last sermon. But when you begin to say, who am I going to love? If you don't find somebody who knows how to live at peace with Christ, you're just inviting a house on the sand. Do you have somebody who knows how to be restored by Christ? As the team comes, Song of Solomon, chapter 8, verses 6 and 7. In Song of Solomon, chapter 8, here's what he says. Here's what she says. She says, place me like a seal over your heart, like a seal on your arm. For love is as strong as death. It's jealousy. Don't think envy and jealousy, and I'm mad at Johnny or Bobby because of jealousy. That has nothing to do with that. It's ardor. It's jealousy is unyielding as the grave. It burns like a burning fire, like a mighty flame. Many waters cannot quench love. Rivers cannot wash it away. If one were to give all the wealth of his house for love, it'd be utterly scorned. This is the one you wait for. All the hard things of life won't wash it away. This is the one you want. Dear brother or sister in Christ, love your family enough to choose this.